Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 152. I am Steve Borsch, and I am on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, that is really upbeat music this morning.
I'm happy. And Phil Wilson.
Just fine. I'm great.
Hello. Good. Are you happy, too?
I'm happy, too.
And how is Mr. Happy? Oh, never mind.
Oh, hey, stop.
Hey.
Oh, hey.
So, big week. Oh, my gosh. CES. You guys wish you were there?
No.
I don't think so.
Happy to read it from a distance.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I would have liked to have been there, but it wasn't as epic as, no big rollouts or anything. But, you got to have those kinds of years in the world of tech and development. Sometimes things are just sort of okay.
Well, doesn't it seem like every new media company, though, was there in force? You had Engadget, you had TechCrunch doing video, you had Twit, Leo Laporte's thing, with a huge stand and booth. You had The Verge. I mean, it was like everybody was there.
Sure. But the showcase was supposed to be about, tech, not the tech companies covering tech.
Right.
Surprisingly, not a lot of announcements, really, that were very surprising.
Yeah, you're right.
Surprising.
Is there one thing that's
very evolutionary?
Yeah, which is okay.
Yeah. Well, Tim, was there one thing that stood out for you that on the coverage?
Well, besides the Ultrabooks, which are MacBook Air style PCs for running Windows.
Yeah.
It seemed like the only other thing was connected TVs.
Yep.
And there was one Lenovo that was actually running full on Android, which I thought was kind of interesting.
As a TV.
Yeah, no, as the smart part of the TV. So smart TVs have been out for a long time. I think Samsung has had their app, app store and all that for years now. But it seems like, it's gaining momentum. And instead of having some crazy low-end operating system that Samsung comes up with, now they're shifted and companies are putting in either Roku, which... Insignia, which is the division of Best Buy that does their store brand hardware.
Yeah.
They partnered up with Roku, who has this crazy thing that looks like a USB stick. That's basically a Roku streaming device, the entire thing.
Just plug it in your HDMI port, right?
Well, no, it plugs into a special port. It's like an HDMI, but it's powered, so you can actually plug into it. And those are just rolling out. So it's either that or a full-on Android. Maybe this whole thing with Apple coming up with the TV is not so far off. Maybe we will see an iOS TV.
With a bunch of apps for channels.
Absolutely.
Did I just hear a sort of a screeching sound as Tim changed course?
Yeah, no, I didn't see this coming. Now, I may still be right that we won't see an Apple TV, but maybe we will. I don't know. That was the only thing that kind of surprised me and made me think, well, maybe we are moving to a future where, we do have operating systems on TVs that are more like handheld devices.
Well, but isn't this really just, we talk about Apple TV, we talk about, there was that announcement also that Best Buy is reorganizing to serve, connected devices a little. Isn't this really just sort of an extension of mobile? That's really all it is, or an extension of just, moving your screen. I mean, you're just varying your screens.
Well, I would disagree with that only because of what's happening with things like Apple's AirPlay or the tablets that have, the iPad and the Android both have apps from ABC and CBS 60 Minutes and Comcast Xfinity. They have their Xfinity TV and Time Warner has theirs. And so, the whole on-demand streaming aspect is it's accelerating rapidly. And so to your point, Tim, having a Google TV, which is basically a bunch of apps or Android or iPad with iOS, it's all about on demand.
Yeah. And I think we're going to see some change in the way that content is delivered to consumers, too, which is a good thing. It's always been frustrating where there's shows that you want to see. And if you don't have cable, you really can't see them. And most of those are sporting events, but there are some serious things that you just can't buy. And hopefully we'll see that change where people can actually purchase either bundles of programming or, you know, individual programs as they're aired and be able to watch them on whatever device they want.
Well, you know what's been interesting too, and I've been noticing this with comments from others and posts that I've been reading, but also experiencing it myself, where somebody will say, "Oh, did you see such and such?" And it was like, "No, I didn't." But then I go and I can pull it up on demand and watch it. And I think there's a lot of that going on as well. That or with 60 Minutes, you know, we record 60 Minutes every Sunday on our TiVo. And with a football game or a basketball game, anything that runs over, typically it'll only record half of it. Mm-hmm. But now with the iPad app and AirPlay, I can just pull up the show on the iPad and hit AirPlay and watch it on the TV.
Yeah, they also have an app that you can watch stuff.
Well, that's what I mean. The 60 minutes.
And they have all the different stories. I like it. I like actually watching it better that way because I can just see the stories and see, oh, there's a story about truffles. I'm going to watch that.
Right. Right.
and not watch the meltdown in Europe story, which is, you know.
Do you like truffle stories? Is that something that you?
Well, you don't see a lot of truffle coverage, and when you do on 60 Minutes, it tends to be very well done, and it actually was. I highly recommend that.
It was a good show.
That's
true
story.
Yeah,
I'll have to put it in the show notes because I'm sure that many listeners will want to go back.
Well, there are many people that are starving
and revisit more truffle that truffle. Well, what's funny is that whole thing it showed the international truffle trade, and it almost looks like drug lords. I mean,
right.
Literally.
Right.
Was this an older truffle story, or is this
no? It's brand new. It was like last week or the week before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's just like the drug trade.
So I mean, it's just like there's truffle cartels.
There is, and China is coming out with inferior truffles, but they're flooding the market at low prices, and it's threatening the European truffle market.
I hate when that
happens. These are the stresses of the rich, Tim. I don't
know. I know.
I'm not too worried about the truffle market.
Global warming is changing where the best truffles are grown, and it's a huge deal.
Tech boys, let's get back to tech. Come on.
Hey, did you guys see that Simple TV truffle thing?
No. What is that? No.
Well, this is sort of it's an interesting idea. So it's you're familiar with the Pogo plug, right? Which is sort of like this little LAMP server that sits for file sharing, basically. But it's a $50 device, and you plug in your own storage, and it's exposed to the internet. Well, Simple TV is the same idea, but you do it for your television. You plug it in, and you get over the air TV. And you could also, I think it has a QAM tuner, so you could plug your cable into it if you wanted to. And then you plug in your own storage, so you get a hard drive and you plug it in. And it basically acts as a DVR that serves up to any device. So you can serve it up to your Roku, to your iPad, to your Boxy Box, your Google TV. They have apps for all of these things. And they also have one for Windows Media Center if you have a Media Center PC. And, of course, for all the smartphone and tablets. So it's a DVR that you can access your content from anywhere. And it, unlike our TiVos, which I love, but getting stuff off the TiVo to your, say, your iPad, it's easy to do, but it takes a long time to do the the re-encoding because of all the DRM and everything they have to do. Well, this is, right out of the box, just taking over-the-air stuff or free unencrypted channels from your cable, putting them into a format that can be easily accessible. And they have a nice web client that you can actually go on any kind of web browser and watch your programming as well.
Well, one thing I want to throw in is for anyone listening, there's a great opportunity to create your own channel. And if you have content that you want to produce and deliver on video, and you think you've got some value, there's no question that we all are going to be able to make choices. If you want to watch the Tim Elliott show all about wine, and Tim Elliott is also a curator of of wine video and things to do with wine, you'll be able to subscribe to that channel and throw that icon on the screen. So that's my my new prediction.
Well, what's funny is that when podcasting started, over seven years ago now, I thought that we would see a proliferation of user generated content and all this stuff, and we really haven't seen that. I mean, podcasting is pretty much, with few exceptions, like the Minovate Gang podcast, professional folks that, big networks, and there's not a lot of independents that are out there.
Well, I would argue that that's not the case, because if you go to iTunes and you just browse the podcast, there are literally close to 30,000 podcasts. Now, how many of those are current, I can't tell, because there's no way to parse that, but there are a lot of them out there. More and more video, though.
Yeah, I think that you have to do video.
Yep.
Say, but by anyway, the way, so all of this stuff, is just saying that maybe Steve Jobs had it right. Maybe he did crack the code, and maybe what we saw at CES is just the tip of the iceberg of a change in the way that entertainment will get to consumers.
Did anybody see any coverage of Cram's device from CES?
No, that's a good question. I have to look that up.
Well, I have, and I haven't found anything.
Oh.
So I just wondered if anybody saw anything. I did a search on Engadget and The Verge and Gizmodo this morning. Didn't see any coverage.
Huh. That's not good.
Yeah.
They should have gotten some play. Of course, they had their Wall Street Journal play before the show, and that was a big hit for them.
Right. Say, Tim, you put something in the notes about Polaroid.
Yeah, I think of Polaroid, and I think, Cambridge, Massachusetts, Edwin Land, all that stuff. Well, they're actually based in Minnetonka now.
Yeah.
So this makes it sort of a local story. And they've, they've done a lot of things in mostly photography-related areas. But they're branching out, and they're actually coming up with a line of tablets. So I put that in. They have a 7, 8, and 9-inch Android ice cream sandwich tablets coming this year.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Didn't they kind of fiddle around in the world of TV for a while as well? Weren't there Polaroid TVs?
Oh, I think there still are. They're at, go to Walmart, and you'll see them there.
Ah, that's it.
So everything seems to be, pretty low end. Just, the same way that the White Westinghouse, which used to also be a proud American brand way back when, is used for the same kind of low end stuff. So, but that was another trend. It seems like there's a lot of sub $200 and in some cases sub $100 Android tablets coming this year, which I think will be interesting, because a lot of people can't afford $500 or even $200 for a tablet. So if you buy something for $79, though, I think a lot of people, might pick up on that, especially if it, if it worked pretty well.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll see. I think if you're paying $79 for a tablet, it's not going to be the same kind of experience that you get for $200 for the Fire or $500 for the iPad.
Yep.
Well, you can always sign up for that the one tablet per child tablet if you want.
Yeah, that also looked interesting.
It does, doesn't
it? Yeah, it really does. And I like that you can charge it with a hand crank.
Yep.
That always sets it apart.
It does. It's true.
Well, the one thing that we didn't put in the show notes that I will is the 2012 and 2013 Ford Fusion. And you may say, what, Steve? Why are you putting that in there? Well, it's because they have this new platform that they're going to have gas hybrid and electric all on the same platform. But it's the stuff that's built in with this Ford Sync and Pandora and Twitter and all this stuff that interacts directly with your phone. I've seen some demonstrations of it, and it looks really, really slick. And it's not that it's the be all end all, but it's clear that our cars are basically becoming big smart mobile devices.
At least Ford's. That's yeah, for sure. They're really ahead of everybody else in that department.
Yeah.
And they were at CES, right?
Oh, very big presence. Their CEO was there. Mm-hmm. Their CTO was there. And at the same time, the Detroit Auto Show was going on. So, I mean, that shows you that CES is very important to them.
Yep. Oh, uh-oh. Somebody got a message.
Notification. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say about CES is
an angel got its wing.
The other thing I was going to say is you had a slight mention of Google TV earlier. I must say I haven't heard a thing out of CTS about Google TV. It kind of flopped last year, and then Schmidt came out and said it's going to be on every TV very soon. What's the story on Google TV? Did it get talked about at all out there?
I didn't see any evidence that anyone was building that into their TVs except for Sony, which that's not news because they did that last year.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on. And the Lenovo full-on Android, I mean, they didn't do Google TV version of Android. They did the full Android. So you have Android market, the whole works. So that's different. And that may be where we're headed. One other interesting thing was the idea, and no one showed it, but I would assume that we would see it from Motorola, is the idea of having a smartphone with a webtop interface like they have with the Atrix, but have the webtop not just be a browser, have it be, you know, full Chromebook. So you'd have, you know, a mobile device like a phone that you plugged in to docking station or some sort of thing that would turn it into a more of a full function computer. So that's another area that I think we're going to see some innovation coming in the year. And I would think that would come from Google and not from anybody else.
Well, actually, we'll have a little bit more from somebody who's actually been at CES. We'll check in with our CES
roving correspondent.
Roving correspondent.
You bring him on every CES, it seems.
Exactly right. Exactly. Mitchell Hillsop will check in with us here in a little bit. But yeah, between now and then, though, we do have another guest. And Graham, why don't you tell us about today's guest?
Yeah, Justin Kaufenberg is our guest today, the CEO and co-founder of TST Media, which is a company that has a content management system for sports teams and leagues and has grown rapidly over the last few years and has quite a presence actually throughout the United States with customers in all 50 states and is really taking a leadership position in that market and has rapidly expanded its workforce here in Minneapolis in Northeast. So it'd be fun to talk to Justin about some of the recent activities of the company since they got another round of funding back in August, I believe it was.
Well, let's get him on.
Well, before we do, I just want to say one quick thing, which is I come out of the content management space. And I've had pretty behind the scenes demo of Engine, which is essentially the technology. There's content management system technology. And these guys have just nailed it. It is really, really robust and easy to use. And they're way too stealthy for as good as a product as they have.
It's not as magical as one might hope, though. I mean, let's not. I use it every single week. So there are some things that can be a little bit clunky about it, but from the standpoint of what was out there or what has been out there for sports teams, sports organizations, and groups to offer a web presence, it's light years ahead of everything. But I would love to see a few more things. It needs a little bit more robust messaging piece to it and things like that.
Yeah.
But It is a really nice platform, and customer service there has been wonderful.
So. Well, let's bring Justin on.
Yeah, let's.
And see what he has to say, and maybe you could make those suggestions to him. Good morning, Justin.
Morning.
Good morning. Steve Borsch here and Phil Graham, Tim are all on.
Hey, Justin.
Hi, guys.
How's it going?
Not too bad. How about you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, well, Justin, I've got the first question of the day here. The most important thing of all, how's the ice doing on Lake Nokomis?
Surprisingly good. We are, as of yesterday, we are 11 to 12 inches everywhere. And at this rate right now, making half an inch to an inch a day, and we are all systems go.
Good. And I should say that TST Media now owns and runs the U.S. Pond Hockey Championships, which has been going on for how many years total now? Justin?
This is the seventh year of the U.S. Pond Hockey Championships. It was originally founded and started by Fred Haberman. He ran it for 5 years, and we at TST took it over. This is our second season.
Yeah. So, it gets just a ton of attention nationally and locally.
That's underway this week, right? Is that underway right now?
Yep. It'll start a 6 days from now, next weekend.
Wow.
So we'll have everybody out registering Thursday night and playing games Friday. And unlike last year, while we were playing a little bit of chicken with Mother Nature with the heat this year, it looks like temperatures are going to be nice as opposed to last year where we were pretty much freezing our asses off out there. Yeah.
I believe that is a technical Weather Channel term.
Yes, that's right.
something I picked up, yeah.
So how many people and how many teams are you expecting this year?
It's actually the biggest year ever for the event. Just about 270 teams, not quite, just about 2,000 players. And it's the most diverse group ever as well. We've got 37 states represented, wow. Five different countries represented, and every Canadian province is sending somebody as well.
Wow.
So it's the the largest and most diverse year of the tournament yet.
Is Guy Kawasaki coming back with his team?
You know, it's I talked to him about that last year, actually, at an event, and he had a blast, but he's not coming back this year, at least not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, they had that team. I covered that and shot photos of them when they were here. I think it was 07 maybe or 08, and it was called the Capitalist Pigs, and they were from Palo Alto, and they didn't do real well that year though, but they sure had a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's last year I ran into a couple of teams who know Guy well and are in the same circles, and they're San Francisco-based, Silicon Valley-based teams. And one of them in particular is called, well, last year they were called 0-16, so this year they had to change their name to 0-20, which is their career record at the tournament.
But they still keep coming back. Good for
they
them.
They do. Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Well, hey, bring us up to speed. We'll start with the story of how TST began. It's a great story. UW Eau Claire. Give us a quick rundown on where you came from.
Yeah, you bet. Our little background was myself personally. I'd always been kind of a serial entrepreneur myself, and had started little businesses growing up, and had a passionate entrepreneur father. We had family meetings growing up, and the subject of every single family meeting was how to make dad rich and keep him from being stuck in 169 traffic twice a day. So we would sit around the family table once a month, myself and my three brothers and my dad, and we'd dream up ideas and try to think of something that he could invent. And so by the time I was in high school, I think at that point it was kind of a foregone conclusion that I had to do something for myself. It had been kind of drilled in over the years. And so I had a little landscaping company. By the time I was finishing high school, I had a painting company that grew to be a pretty substantial size, actually. We had about 20 people working there full-time in trucks and trailers, and we were painting hundreds of houses. And that gave me my first kind of real taste of what it meant to actually run a business. You know, we were generating, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, when we were, this was a career for a lot of full-time painters. And I kind of realized through that experience that even in a hyper-competitive, low barrier to entry, price-sensitive market, you can be successful if you basically, show up on time and don't do awful work. And that was kind of an eye-opener. So I got to school at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire, and met Carson Kipfer in the dorm room in Murray Hall. And he had actually had a very similar kind of, you know, high school career and childhood career, and had run a couple small companies himself and had a pretty successful graphic design business. And he and I connected. And at the time, you know, I was doing anything to avoid going to class was what it boiled down to.
And playing hockey, too. You played you played on the team there, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Eau Claire was at the time, my entire decision making process was around what's the least expensive school that will allow me to play hockey. And and Eau Claire was a good fit. So it was a good time. We were having a ton of fun playing hockey. Wasn't spending a lot of time in the classroom. So Carson and I decided that, you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't try to do a little something together. So we were sitting in his dorm room, and he essentially looked at the sign on the door, which was third floor north wing of Murray Hall. Thought that was a pretty decent name. So we incorporated a company the following day, called it Third North Creative. And just like the painting company, what I had learned was there's no sense in just kind of dabbling in it. So we bought an office in downtown Eau Claire in the old Uniroyal tire plant and started hiring students and even a couple of professors, and just started, again, a painting lesson, just cold calling, knocking on doors, knocking on businesses, offering services as a development and design kind of agency style company. And we were fortunate. We were able to have some success. We did good work from a design and development perspective, and it took off pretty quickly. And we actually ran that business then all through college, really, you know, pretty much, you know, getting to class on occasion, playing hockey, and then going straight to work, going to the office, which is kind of funny now in hindsight. Yeah. But by the time we finished school, by the time we wrapped up, it was a successful, profitable business. And we really enjoyed it. But the thing that kind of, you know, made us change gears a bit was that it was agency style work. You know, every time you finished a project, handed it off a website, you know, completed a development project, you were, for all intents and purposes, you know, out of work again, you know, save for some maintenance contracts and those things.
Right.
So we didn't, you know, we were just learning on the fly. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. We didn't have experience with, you know, software, SaaS-based business models, recurring revenues. This was, we didn't know any of that. But just kind of intuitively, it made sense. We thought that, you know, we have to find a way to get people to pay us money when we're not actually doing every single billable hour. So we were fortunate to kind of, you know, exit Third North and rolled in the, you know, kind of proceeds that we had made there into TST Media, and founded that company just very specifically to do one thing: to build, market, and sell our engine platform, NGIN, to build that engine platform and sell it very specifically to sports organizations. So to build an actual SaaS-based platform specifically aimed at helping those sports leagues and organizations manage their operations. So it was, that was kind of the twisty little road that got us to TST Media.
Now, then, had you moved to the Twin Cities by this time, or did it actually start in Eau Claire?
It technically started in Eau Claire, though pretty quickly, I was, our entire marketing budget was about $500, which meant that we could essentially fill my Jeep up with gas and buy posters. Was basically what it boiled down to. So our first year's marketing budget went into a quick little miniature photo shoot, which was just, I took my hockey skate, pulled the laces out of it, threaded, you know, an old blue Ethernet cable, threw it in place of the hockey lace. Carson took a picture of it. We called it the Hockey Association website solution. Our first marketing piece, you know, bought about 5,000 of them, put them in the Jeep, and started crisscrossing the upper Midwest. And we would walk into a hockey rink and put duct tape on the corners of a poster, kind of sneak our way into the rink, pretend we were using the bathroom, slam them up on the stall doors. if we made it out of the men's room unscathed, we would run back to the Jeep quick and grab a little brochure holder and slip a piece of 3M tape on the bottom of the brochure holder, stick a few brochures in there. We'd walk up to the concession stand counter, pretend we were hemming and hawing over nachos or a hot dog, kind of set the brochure holder down with the sticky tape peeled off, hem and haw a bit more, and decide, well, you know, we'll just walk away. And to this day, years later, you can go to hockey rinks all over the upper Midwest and see the place where they've tried to scrape off that damn 3F tape.
Boy, talk about guerrilla marketing at its finest. That's outstanding.
But who was the first one you signed up? Did you go back to your high school? Was that in Columbia Heights? Is that where you went?
I grew up in that area, but then actually went to high school down in Shakopee,
Oh, that's
Minnesota.
Right.
And so, yeah, we were, you know, I give so much credit to my most inspirational teacher, certainly growing up in high school, was Ed Loisel. Coach Loisel was also my hockey coach. And so when we started the company, I went back to him and told him that this is what we're doing. He actually provided a ton of the feedback and the insight and the things that he would use if he had a platform like this. And he said, if you build it, I'll be the first one to write you a check. And true to his word, we finished it, not without a pile of bugs, but he wrote a multi-$1,000 check to be the very first subscriber ever. And ShakopeeHockey.com was our first property. And ultimately, without getting that portfolio example, you know, it's not an easy task to you know, to go in and sell something that nobody else has taken a flyer on. So yeah, we owe a lot to Ed and my alma mater.
Cool. Well, and bring us up to date. How many customers now? And give us the overview.
Yeah. So during that guerrilla marketing period, we did move to Minneapolis. It was a bit more central for the poster distribution system there. And at that time, it was just Carson and I, and we quickly then brought on two other partners, Greg Blasco, who's our CTO to this day, who had great hardware software experience. He was the founder of Peak Timing Systems, a company here locally who's been a total innovator in the race results timing space for endurance events. And then we also brought in Michael Lewis, one of the original developers of Travelocity.com, longtime Silicon Valley veteran who was from Minnesota and came back. So it was the four of us really toiling away at that time. And now I guess that was technically from the time we came to market. That was probably about, you know, 3-4 years ago now, about 40 months ago. So there's about 80 of us now in the office. We've got about 2,000 clients. We've got 2,000 leagues in all 50 states, a number of different countries now, spending a lot of time working on the platform translation and making the actual underlying code base language agnostic for some more international expansion. I've been through a couple of rounds of capital raising. And yeah, we've been having a ton of fun with it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Steve or
Phil, jump in. Yeah, I wanted to ask a question about Engine itself. You do have a separate site for Engine. Mm-hmm. And I've kind of been poking around a little bit. Are you guys white labeling that for others? Are you providing that as a core marketable product?
You know, that's an interesting question. It's something we have been spending a little bit of time on lately. So the majority of those 2,000, you know, current clients, or I guess a little over 2,000 current clients, use the actual branded Engine product. They make a purchase directly from our direct sales staff, and they roll that out. However, we've done a number of tests with kind of, distributors. Those have been, in a couple of cases, sports agencies that rep large teams, large leagues, or even pro athletes. In a couple of cases, you know, technology distributors or agencies in a given market. Mm-hmm. And what we've done there is essentially exactly as you said, white label the platform. They've looked at it and said it fits our needs better than a WordPress, Joomla, Drupal, you know, from scratch base. And instead, they've been developing around the Engine. So we've begun to open up, you know, the APIs, you know, we've kind of begun to build a little bit of a developer ecosystem around the product. Mm-hmm. And it's been really cool now to see. So for the very first time, there's been mobile apps popping up that are drawing data from the Engine. There's been a number of third-party apps popping up that are, connecting, you know, to the platform. So it is really beginning to build a lot of steam as an actual platform.
Is there any way to, and this is always the issue over open source content management systems or document management, whatever the area is, and open source is, no matter what, in theory, open source always can develop plugins and things of that nature very fast to fill in holes that exist. With your APIs, do you have the ability to run or developers, for example, to be able to develop plugins or things that can God, I can't even talk this morning. I'm sorry. God, my brain is like going, go back to sleep, Steve.
What is it you want, Steve?
Just
that was such a fun.
Can you extend engine?
You know what? It's it's something that's top of mind for us right now. So right now, yes, there are opportunities, and there have been companies actually. There's been a couple of companies as a matter of fact that have been founded solely to build around the engine. A couple of companies that handle scheduling, game scheduling, a couple that handle specific statistical modules, things like that, areas where they think there's an opportunity and a gap, and we're happy to have them. Essentially, the way we're handling it right now, though, is that it's essentially an approved developer ecosystem, so there is a personal connection there. The next step, of course, would be to really open that up, and we are, hardly a day goes by when we're not having a discussion internally about finding the exact, right fit, from an openness perspective. But it's, there's been enough interest, and enough kind of momentum behind, the platform, actually fueling that type of ecosystem that it's a very real possibility for us to get significantly more open there.
Yep.
Justin, it's Phil Wilson, also a heavy user of Engine. I get to maintain the site for my daughter's basketball club. So
awesome.
I use it almost regularly. I guess you could say almost every day, but at least once a week, depending on how parents respond. But listen, my question is, where are you at as far as mobile compatibility right now? There really is not necessarily a mobile version of, for example, our site. Is that in the works? Is that happening? Is that going to be more robust? As I see more and more iPads popping up at games and more smartphones, and that desire to be able to stay on top of brackets and things like that. Where are you guys at with that?
Yeah, great question, Phil. It's so we're going to see two major releases here in the first half of this year, and then one of them in particular just about a month here. So one kind of our internal project that we've deemed Pocket Engine, which will be the full mobile version of all the sites. So your site and anybody else on the Engine platform will have an instantly available, full mobile version, mobile web version here in the first quarter of the year. So that's been a big project, not so much because it's terribly difficult to build a mobile version, but a little bit more difficult in that we wanted it to be really what we consider kind of tool-based and actually API-fed, so that that site, because you have a site for your basketball organization, but the other 2,000 that are out there have similar, looks, feels, layouts, data sets, et cetera, but not identical. So having that engine be robust enough to be able to translate all your data and essentially distill it down to the core tools, statistics, schedules, standings, team pages, player profiles, user accounts, things like that, and then actually have kind of a quality streamlined display for the mobile web. So that is going to deploy here in pretty short order. That's been a big project. The other, and something we're extremely excited about, is the iOS and Android native apps will be deploying here as well. Those are scheduled for end of February, early March, depending on approval processes, et cetera, scheduled for deployment into the app stores also. And those are going to take a kind of totally different tact, where you're going to be able to go in, you're going to be able to follow a team or follow multiple teams. You're going to be able to combine all your different multiple team instances into a single live stream for your family, aggregate calendar, aggregate schedule, live stream pings of different, family alerts, a goal was scored, a statistical entry was made, a photo was shot and tagged, a video was shot and tagged. It's also going to really center around content creation. So your ability to shoot photo, shoot video, automatically connected to a team, to a player, to an actual literal goal if you are live scoring a game or a basket. So that's really going to kind of push what we've done from a UGC perspective.
Oh boy, I just got, I'm kind of giddy now.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Only because, I think that you've hit on a lot of different things that I see great use for, that ability to stream did you mention upload the ability to upload photos from game sites and things like that to
yeah, your, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, That's great. I mean, that really allows a lot more flexibility. And so kudos to you. I'm glad that that's in the works. I'm very excited about that. And if you anybody listening has an opportunity to work with an organization, a sports organization that may be youth-based or whatever sports organization, you really ought to take a look at Engine because it does offer a very robust platform out there that really allows you a lot of flexibility. We always want new features, but I tell you, the mobile is a big step, Justin. Thanks very much for that.
That's
exceptional.
Yeah, no, you bet. It's, and you know, 2012 and beyond is going to be a lot of fun, you know, for, you know, we as a company, generally speaking, you know, as we just talked about, we were, you know, relatively bootstrapped, raised a little bit of angel capital early, but it wasn't, you never feel like you're going fast enough, you know, so it wasn't until recently when we, you know, padded the coffers a bit more with a raise in August of this past year that we've really been able to put the horsepower in place to do a lot quickly, you know, and what's been both frustrating and exciting is that, you know, you raise the capital, you bring on, you know, we brought, you know, a significant staff expansion, primarily software engineers, you know, and UI UX developers. But so little of that has come to market so far. So people know that we, you know, raised millions of dollars a few months ago, you know, they want to know what's coming out and when. We're really going to see an avalanche of deployments in 2012, which is going to be extremely exciting. It's just been the, you know, the very impatient waiting game between that time and now when we see those projects come to completion and begin to come to market. So it's going to be a ton of fun here going forward.
Is the revenue stream for the business strictly built on subscriptions, Justin? Is that the revenue stream?
You know, we generate revenue in, I guess, technically a couple of different ways. So certainly the rock of the business is the, you know, SaaS-based annually recurring, monthly recurring fee, you know, good, predictable revenue. But we also generate revenue from payment processing. You know, so we have the system built in, you know, turnkey for the opportunity to process payments, to allow player online sign up, to track that player data, track those player financials, to do those things. And at this point, the company has grown to a size and there's enough volume where, you know, we'll, this year, process in excess of, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars through the system.
Wow.
So the volume has become such that even, you know, with the type of, you know, micro margins that exist in the master merchant world, there's still significant revenue there. You know, additionally, now what we're spending a lot of time on is actually using data itself, you know, kind of the data monetization side of our business. So for those organizations that like to be a part of that, there's those opportunities, you know, working with media outlets to provide them API level access to streams of sports scores, standings, game results, photos, news, videos, starting to kind of close that feedback loop with local sports organizations and the media outlets. And, you know, there's a monetization model around that as well.
And the Star Tribune being one of those partners, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Star Tribune's been an awesome partner. You know, they've, you know, Jim Bernard there, who's got, you know, great technical experience himself, and their SVP of digital over there has been a great partner. And we work with them on the hub properties in Minnesota. So MN Hockey Hub, MN Basketball Hub, those are Engine properties. And the data then is flowing directly in StarTribune.com, you know, reverse publishing into the following day's paper for box score printing, et cetera. And it's become a real, and even fueling their mobile apps, the Star Tribune mobile app. So it's been a really effective partnership, and that type of model now is being extended all over the country.
Well, that's really outstanding. I had lunch with Jim Bernard this past week, and he mentioned that, and I told him you were going to be on the podcast this week, and he just had nothing but praise for TST Media and you and the crew.
Well, that's really nice of him to say, and you know, not to pump his tires too much, but to return the favor a bit, you know, working with the Star Tribune, it's been extremely gratifying to have Jim as a partner. I think that not to go too far off topic, but we work with now a lot of media outlets, a lot of traditional media outlets. We've seen them all over the country. And I think the Star Tribune has found somebody in Jim that's really totally unique around the country. And the attack he's taking and what he's doing with that company, I think is just extremely impressive. They've got a really bright future with him there.
Well, great. Say one last thing, Justin. We didn't touch on Event Engine. Do you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, we can touch on that. You know, and that really ties into the pond hockey tournament.
Yeah, so that's how you came to acquire Pond Hockey. They used your platform, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we've always had, you know, so Engine at its core is really a set of, you know, well, for all intents and purposes nowadays, it's a set of APIs, but it's that core platform that's content management, it's payment processing, it's user account management, it's those core functions. So to apply that now to a sports-specific vertical in the team space versus an event-specific vertical in the more one-off event space, that's really a seamless transition for us. But we wanted to get the word out that we can handle not just your team sports, but also these types of running races, marathons, one-off tournaments, things like that. For us, it's always been a lot more effective to do non-traditional marketing. The most effective marketing for us has been word of mouth and just proving that we can do it. So when we launched Event Engine, we thought, what better way to prove that we can do it than to buy an event? So we, you know, we looked all over the country and wanted to find something that was fun, you know, and attractive and generated good, good media and good PR. And we didn't have to look far. It was right in our backyard, and you know, we were friends with Fred and admired what they were doing with the tournament. So, yeah, you know, hence the acquisition of US Pond Hockey running on the Event Engine platform. And yeah, it's a cool example of how you can manage that type of, you know, operation from a software perspective.
Yep, it's a great showcase account, that's for sure. And you guys run some other fairly well-known events too, don't you?
The platform itself powers a lot of the lifetime fitness events, you know, the Birkebeiner ski race, you know, a number of marathons around the country. So Event Engine really has grown quickly for us. We have some people in-house that do nothing but sell Event Engine around the country. And it's been well received. We can compete there from a payment processing and a registrant sign-up perspective with the best of them because of our volume. And for a lot of events, that's a big part of the decision-making process is how you manage that registration.
Sure.
Well, Justin, it's been great to have you on. I really appreciate you carving out the time, especially on a Saturday morning.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys are awesome. I'm a loyal listener, so this is a ton of fun.
Oh, God love you.
Thanks.
God love you. You're the one.
Yeah.
Hey, well, yeah, good to talk to you, Justin, and good luck with the tournament next week. I'm dying to get over there and watch some of it.
Well, I'll have some free beer tickets waiting for you.
Hey, hello. There you go. Hello. Speaking our language.
All right.
Thanks,
man. Take care.
Have a great day.
What a great guy.
Yeah, he really is. He's a ball of energy, I'll tell you.
Well, he needs to be with all the stuff they got going on.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I am doing some work with them, so I've gotten to know these guys pretty well, and they are an awesome crew, I'll tell you.
Well, how is it? Because there's a lot of floor space there. Do you have a big broom or a small one?
A big what?
A big broom or a small broom for sweeping? Oh, you're doing other kind of work. Oh,
yes,
never mind.
That's yeah, I'm not there very often, but I have been into their facilities, which they're expanding like mad, knocking walls out. You know, they're in a really nice building in Northeast called the Van Buren Building, which has been restored and lots of brick and high ceilings. Yep. And big windows. And like he said, I think they're upwards of 80 employees now, and I think a year ago they were probably half that.
That's
so
incredible.
That's how fast they're running over there.
Well, Phil, you were saying that we've got Mitch Hislop is he still out at CES
is he
back?
I believe he's back. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead and get Mitch on?
Do you want to grab? Yeah, let's do that and hear what he thought about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we can go circle back to what's going on at CES, and he can also give us the straight scoop on did the AVNs get moved so we're not in coinciding with CES anymore? So.
Yeah.
Because that's really the important thing.
Mitch, is that you?
Hello.
Mitchell, Steve Borsch, and Graham, Tim, and Phil are on.
Hello.
Hey.
How you
What's
doing?
What's up?
Good, good.
So you went to CRS, or excuse me, CES. Sorry. Wrong seminar.
Show.
Yeah. Wrong show. CES. So yes. Tell us, what were the highlights, my friend?
It was an interesting year because there was as you guys probably saw from the covers, there was no big breakout category like we usually have. You know, in 2010, everyone cared about 3D TVs. Those were new and the latest and greatest. Last year was all about tablets. There were over 100 tablets released at CES. This year, the trend was more, let's iterate a little bit on old technology, that we came up with and make it better. Because while the smart TV sitting in the living room of my apartment is great, it's not very cool to check Twitter on my TV. You know, that's a useful demonstration of the technology, but right. Long term, that's not what I want to do with it.
Right.
So let's start to try to get closer to that. You know, let's make the TVs better. You know, we started to see some really, really thin bezel TVs coming out because Corningware has a new line of Gorilla Glass on. We're getting even closer to that bezel-less TV. The new 4K TVs started coming out, which are the 4K by 2K resolutions.
How'd those look? Were those awesome?
Oh my goodness. Though I was more sold on that than I ever have been on 3D TVs.
Really?
It is absolutely gorgeous.
And does it run at a faster frame rate or the same frame rate?
I think it's a little bit faster.
Okay.
The full aperture 4K TVs have, you know, 12.7 million pixels. Like they just look fantastic.
So when do we have to start worrying about running into our TVs? Like, you know how your dog runs into the sliding glass door. When do we have to start worrying about that?
we're not quite there yet. But we are getting close. I mean, I think it was, let me see if I can find it.
It's it's Steve's vision of a holodeck, you know, coming to an abrupt reality.
That's right.
Right. We're definitely getting close. Yeah. I mean, LG here. I'm gonna see if this is what I was thinking. Ba-ba-ba. I think it is.
We can't see you, right?
I had to find the link.
Okay, got it.
The one that sort of stole the show, this LG one. I mean, they're just fantastic. And we're also starting to get to the point where the other sort of the closest thing I'd have to a breakout trend is all of the connected devices that didn't used to be connected. So Fitbit joined the Wi-Fi scale movement and really is sort of helping push forward the digital health and digital fitness and connected self movement. Both, you know, they had their Fitbit Ultra device, but now they have their own Wi-Fi scale. That it'll talk to the same online service so that I can, you know, I could basically wake up in the morning, you know, unhook my Fitbit from my wrist where it was tracking sleep, put it in my pocket, stand on my scale, go about my day normally, and end up with a ton of data about myself that I can then use to get healthier, you know, target what I want to work on, those sorts of things, all without really any interaction for me and with, you know, between the Aria and the scale, that you're going to get that all for like $230.
Mm-hmm. But it doesn't talk to you and says, "Hey, Mitchell, get off your butt. Get moving."
Yeah, no, it doesn't yet. Thank goodness.
All right. It just goes, ding.
That wouldn't be a good thing.
So listen, besides TV, Mitchell, it seemed that Windows and Windows phones were sort of talked a lot about. Was it more PR hype or was it really a big talk? I mean, are we going to see an emergence of the Windows 7 platform or Windows Phone 7?
Yes, and I also hope so. So the Lumia 900 was the big release.
Mm-hmm.
That phone is absolutely beautiful. I am the kind of guy with an iPhone in my pocket. I'm just one of those guys, but the Lumia 900, I cannot believe how sexy that phone is. And it just sort of proved to me, between the phone and how the Windows Phone 7 mobile phone tile interface, works on it and looks on it. The whole thing together just feels like the first time I played with an iPhone and how great that all felt together. It's doing the exact same thing. So I think we might finally start to see Windows Phone 7 actually gain some momentum, which would be great because not only is it a great interface and whatnot, but it's what people are going to be using with Windows 8, the new Metro UI, which they had a bunch of computers that run developer previews of. And I, for one, like it, but one thing I didn't really think about is I was talking to my dad, who's the CIO of a company. He was there with me. And he brought up how he has, you know, 400 people working for him that don't need that new interface or even a new interface at all to still be able to sit down and do their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of hoping that some more details on the meat and potatoes of Windows 8 come out, because right now it doesn't, right now it sounds a lot like it's just a UI refresh instead of actual new things going on. Like we saw when Mac went to Lion. You know, there are actual new features in there, not just interface stuff.
Right.
Well, as a web geek, you've got to appreciate too that the Windows smartphones run WebKit.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. You can build an HTML5 based web app that runs on any platform.
Right. Right. And I was actually playing with one of my good friends who I met up with there, Greg Jacobs. He lives up in Canada, and he's been doing a lot of Windows Phone Dev. So him and I spent some time. He was walking me through how Windows Phone Dev looks and works, because I don't have a device to play with, and it's very nice. And it, like you said, it is all WebKit, so it is helping push forward the trend slightly away from platform-specific native code to code that's running on the web that you can do other things with. And since it's HTML5 and basically runs WebKit, it also makes it really easy to use with like a phone gap framework, which basically allows you access to the phone APIs from an HTML and CSS and JavaScript app that you can compile into the native code in the best of both worlds. And this just is another place where that code base would work and make sense with minimal amount of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're doing, it's one of those things where they're doing everything right. It's just a question of if they're too late. Like right. I now have really no gripes with the platform anymore. It's just, can you catch up in time?
Yeah. Well, let me ask you another couple of quick things and then we'll let you go. A couple of best ofs that I'm looking at this CNET article and I was kind of curious. Have you gotten yourself a MakerBot yet?
No. And I still haven't gotten the chance to get down to Coco and play with Joe's yet.
Yeah, so Joseph Reuter has actually created a group, right? I mean, he's got a little group here in Minneapolis that actually I haven't been able to make it. So, Joseph, if you're listening, I'm sorry, because I'm really hot on the 3D space. And for those that don't know, I know I've said this before, but we have one of the premier 3D printing companies in the world right here in Eden Prairie, Stratasys.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, somebody's rocking out. Did you just decide to play a little? Just play a little, apparently little rock band or what?
Apparently that CNET article has music somewhere on it.
Yes. I love it. I love it.
Well, so then the last thing, and I was sort of I saw this announcement roll out midweek, and you know I saw a little picture of it. This HP Envy Ultrabook. This thing looks just like, pictures, it remarkably like an Air, a MacBook Air.
The Spectre.
Yeah.
There was also quite a few Ultrabooks there, but they weren't as interesting. I saw the HP one. It's absolutely beautiful. And a lot of the Ultrabooks are absolutely beautiful, but the one thing that isn't quite there yet is Apple's hardware knowledge on them.
Right,
because
right.
Most of the other ones that I felt, and this is going to make me sound like a fanboy, and I'm sorry, I have a little more anecdotal evidence to back it up, but none of them felt as good as the Airs I've touched did. For instance, my dad pointed this one out. We were walking around, and he loves his MacBook Air. So we were checking out some of the different ones and just sort of playing with them. And he would always, while it's sitting there, he would always just sort of touch the screen and just sort of pull the corner a little bit and see what happens. And on the Air and on most Mac computers, they just sort of sit there. And on like the HP Envy or a lot of the Acer models, the screen just sat there and wobbled back and forth.
Ooh. Interesting.
I mean, it's a great idea. And I love to see that we finally realize that netbooks aren't a great idea. So let's figure out a different computer. It's just not quite like, if you're going to try to knock off Apple, make sure you get the build quality down. Cause a lot of us hardcore geeks, that's what we look for.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you though, it's walking into Micro Center and seeing this entire array of PCs, laptops, and just standing back and saying, every single one of them, with the exception of maybe one or two Sonys, are just butt ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And the Ultrabooks look nice. I mean, all of them.
Yeah.
Good design, attractive.
And so much closer to what most people need in a computer.
Right.
Like we're finally getting to that quote unquote perfect computer for your standard person. It's like right there with the Ultrabooks.
So, well, Mitch, thanks very much. But before we let you go, obviously, you know, you're a developer now over at Cotter Web. You've had a lot of experience in the social space and the dev space, and we see you at a lot of events. So what takes you to CES just every year? Is it just curiosity and fun?
Yeah, curiosity, fun, and my love of technology. I just, you know, this is my third year. And I just love going. I mean, it's a giant show floor that at its core, you know, there are some people there who are there for marketing purposes, but most of the people there are geeks who love technology. So for me, it's a great chance to sort of be in that world and have these discussions with people. For instance, I was sitting outside of waiting for the session with Gary Shapiro, the head of the CEA, and Brian Dunn, CEO of Best Buy, to start because I really wanted to catch that, especially since the Forbes article had come out like a week
before.
Right.
And I was sitting next to just a couple different people outside while we were waiting for a seat. And, you know, people like Kelly Grayler was there from Best Buy, who we were talking to. But just the conversations that we would have that were about sort of the what does this all mean? Like, we've seen all this new technology, but what actually matters that we saw? I mean, yes, LG's brand new smart fridge is cool. And the feature where it can cool a warm can of beer to, you know, a cold, really nice drinkable temperature in 5 minutes is awesome. But, you know, how does that actually push us forward and push the industry forward?
Wow. Right. Hey, did you see our pals from Cram Worldwide?
I did. Yeah. I did. I actually saw them a few times and had a ton of fun and then super, super, super excited about their product and everywhere that it can go.
Great. What in particular excites you about it?
I really, really like their approach to security on it and really think that their platform and all of the things that they can do with it, because the Cram Worldwide venue product, the home solution, is sort of their first one. And for those who aren't familiar, it's a new in-home media solution that relies on big, big, really secure hard drives instead of streaming over the internet. But this same platform, and we were talking about their platform, because I'm a geek, that's what was really interesting to me. And with all these security levels, you know, I could see this being put in server closets to help facilitate backups, because yep. Then even if you lose that backup drive, it's a lot less risky than if you lose one of your current ones, because it can only work in your device. Or medical records, you know, with all the security, it's kind of funny. Having designed it to be secure enough for Hollywood has also made it secure enough for a whole lot of other things, just sort of out of the box.
And for those that don't know, this device is designed so that even if hackers pop the thing apart and try to figure out how to get into the guts of the hardware, it actually destroys the device.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's got this fail-safe hardware aspect to it, that if you pop the case and you break the seal, that's it. It's over.
Yeah.
And that's why they're getting major interest from military and government applications.
Well, exactly.
And healthcare.
Well, and like you just said, Mitch, it's Hollywood is not comfortable putting their intellectual property on a device if some kid in Norway can hack it and
right,
you know, get all the content off of it.
Right, right. And it also sort of made me, I also spent some time visiting with our local friends at Memorex, because this was their first time on the show floor in 8 years. And
well, were you in need of a cassette? What were you looking for?
No.
You're talking Imation, right?
Yep. Imation, yep. Memorex, all their brands. Because it was the first time in the show floor in a long time, so I wanted to see what they were doing. And one of their lines are a whole bunch of hard drives that are coming out that have features that before we were only really in the realm of the geeky or the person who know what they were doing. So not only do they facilitate backups and cloud backups with the hard drives, but they're also really well encrypted, but sort of in a way that isn't annoying to the user. Or they have a flash drive that has Bluetooth in it, and that Bluetooth talks to your phone, so that when it's plugged into your computer and you have your phone on you, you can access it. But if you walk away, it locks the flash drive.
Nice.
I mean, and if you lose it, you can just say this thing can never connect to this phone again. And since it's already locked, it, you know, it's a dumb flash drive. You know, you can't do anything with it if you found it. So it's all of the new products out of them, because I mean, Memorex has a whole bunch of new products under that name, and they have some under other names. I'll have a full post coming up later. Are all sort of products that we've seen before, but with really, really well thought out extra features. So they have earbuds that are really nice because they built a giant sound lab in their Oakdale office. Not only are their earbuds really nice, but every single pair have on the connector have an extra plug on the back, an extra female 3.5 millimeter plug so that you could chain them together. It's called a sharing plug, so that instead of needing a Y adapter, if I wanted to listen to what Phil was listening to, I could just plug mine directly into his headphones.
You'd never want to listen to what I was listening to.
I was going
to
say, do you like Lawrence Welk, Mitch?
Hey. I happen to be more of a... Okay, it's Lawrence Welk. Well, listen, Mitch, thanks very much for checking in with us. We appreciate it. You're now our official go-to person on CES. So every year, you've got a date. So it's like we're your fallback. We're your date.
And we're thankfully getting later and later.
No.
I remember being pretty still waking up during last year's interview. Yeah. So
there you go.
Yep. So listen, we appreciate it, my friend. Take care of yourself and good luck. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, you guys too.
Okay. Thanks. Take care, Mitch.
Mitchell Bitsop, he's over at Cotter Web, and he also has his own little endeavor. Let me find that. I'm sorry, I didn't have it handy. We ought to plug that because I think he's doing some freelance work, and that is Nolvar Studios. So there you go.
Put in the show notes.
Put it in the show notes. So anyway. Events coming up. We probably ought to get moving on that.
Yep. Mini demo is Thursday the 18th.
Freed out, sold out, freed out.
Yeah. Right? Same with the MEMA event, also on the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Thomson Reuters tech event is still open.
Yep.
WordPress MSP. Tim, that's still open, right? I mean,
oh, yeah.
They can just put more seats in if necessary.
Yeah. It's a large space. So,
yep.
And then this new organization, mnsearch.org.
Yeah, what is that?
Yeah, Ward Tongan reached out. Do you guys know Wardo?
Sure.
He's now the president or the head of this new Minnesota Search Marketing Association, mnsearch.org for short. And they have a kind of a rock star guy coming to town to talk about Raven Tools, which is one of their main tool sets, those SEO guys. So it's a pretty big deal to have this guy in town, and they're doing that Thursday evening, the 26th, from 6 to 8:30 over in St. Paul. We've got the link in the show notes for the actual location.
So does that mean search matters?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It might catch on.
Next week, we should talk about the Google adding social search.
Yeah,
that was a big story this week.
The Google, and, the Google Plus stuff.
We just had too much.
There was lots going on.
I know.
Well, and with the growth of Bing now, and Bing's got Mojo.
Yep.
In addition to Microsoft getting some Mojo out of CES. So it's been a good week for Microsoft.
It has been.
SMB is coming up on the 27th.
SMB MSP will be on the topic of public media. I'll be moderating that panel. We have members from TPT and NPR and MinPost there. So it's going to be, I'm going to need a whip and a chair. I think there's a lot of people on the panel. So it'll be great. It'll be a great session. So hopefully we'll see you there, and it's held at TPT this year.
And then Mobile March in March, but you've got a call for speakers out now.
Call for speakers is out. Mobile March is set for the 16th and 17th of March. This year it'll be at the Embassy Suites Minneapolis Airport, a new location for us. So, and it'll also incorporate, the nice thing is Mobile 3D was in a different location last year. This year Mobile 3D will be in the same space. So registration is available for both Mobile 3D and Mobile March. Actually, the registration should post later today or tomorrow. So
great.
Look for that during the week. And then if you'd like to do, if you have a topic that you'd like to speak about at Mobile March, we do have a limited number of slots available, and we ask that you go ahead and fill out an application to speak. And that's all available at the Mobile March Twin Cities, mobilemarchtc.com.
Fabulous. Awesome.
Good looking. Yeah, I'm on it. Yeah, it looks good.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening to the Minivate Gang podcast, and to you guys for carving out the time this morning. This is great.
As always, we have a good time. You know that.
Of course. All right.
All right, everybody, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week
on the Minivate Gang podcast. Take
care.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
See ya. Bye.